Well, welcome to My Life in Football, Season 4. We're back again with another fantastic interview, and I'm really pleased to say a good friend of, again of my Monday night show, and of course been on a few times in Mr. Lewis Spence, of course the absolute legend that he is, and he keeps telling me that his sister's bigger than him, but I don't believe it for a minute. He's the man with that, of course, the winner's medal in the FA Trophy from a few years ago. But Lewis, it's great to have you on with us, and I mean, first questions I ask everybody: how's life treating you at the minute?
Yeah, good, good. Can't really complain. I left Hornchurch last summer due to just a change in circumstances. It was looking like heading the route of coaching, which I did enjoy in my time there. But I just felt like I had some more minutes in the legs. Wanted to prove a few people wrong still at my grand age of 37. And took on the opportunity to join Waltham Abbey in the summer. That went, it started well. I was definitely out of shape and had to get myself up to speed and things like that. But towards the tail end of pre-season, as it always does, I broke down and then was considering hanging my boots up. Can't commend Billy the Gaffer enough, Billy Holland, just top man to be fair to him. He kept in contact with me all throughout my kind of going down the route of getting a prognosis, a diagnosis of what had gone on and how I could come back from that. And just kept touching base, and it kind of kept the light alive. It kind of gave me that little bit of desire to get back fit. Started looking after myself once I was up and running. And then in December, he offered me a few games. They were still in the cup games. So I had an opportunity to go and play and see where I was at, enjoyed it, enjoyed being around the group again after having been with them in pre-season. And then it sort of took on that busy period of Christmas. The other half weren't very happy because it meant I was away from the family and the kids, and it just all kind of come back. But I really got that desire to get up and going, and that's testament to Billy as a manager, the group of boys that are there as well, and the club itself, because I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. I think I'm 11 games in now. And I hope that I've shown them what I could still offer. And I've definitely proved to myself again that I'm capable. So, yeah, enjoying it over at Waltham Abbey, and the boys are flying. So, again, testament to how their season's gone. Had a very good January and February up until now. So, hopefully, it continues towards the tail end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go more into it later on in the program, but I mean, of course, I was there to see it, an absolute wonder goal, probably goal of the season for me already. And then, of course, you've had a red card in there as well thrown in. So
I
happy
dropped
days,
that
eh?
one in,
But
no, for the red card I'm talking about. No, the goal, to be fair, yeah, we're going to that a bit later, but timing's everything, and I probably needed that myself. I think in the game itself we was playing, I think Whittam, who were third maybe at the time, and we were just outside the playoff places. And we got a goal against the run of play, and then it sort of just kicked us into gear. So yeah, no, it was an enjoyable one again, and it showed me that I still had it. I still had it.
And a nice little trip, as we'll go into, say, later on, but a nice little trip to one of my favourite places in the world tomorrow, down to Wroxham.
Yeah, so somehow I've managed to escape that one. Picked up an injury last week at home to Brentwood. So just going to manage that over the next couple of weeks and try and make sure that I'm ready towards the end of the season again.
No. Well, I mean, let's, as we normally do, we go back from there, we go back to all from over the end. I mean, where did it all start for yourself? I mean, was it school, around the school sort of time? Was it youth sides? I mean, where did it all start for a young Lewis Spence?
Oh, so we're going right back now. So for me, where did it start? My probably passion and love for football started with through my dad. He used to manage a team, a youth team called Ziggy's in South London. So this team, when I reel off some of the names here, older people that would listen to this would definitely know some of the names. Gary Alexander was one of the standouts. Leon Court, his brother Carl Court, I believe, used to train with him as well. Sean Davis, who played in the Premier League for Fulham and Portsmouth, I believe. Julian Gray, who was at Arsenal and then went on to have a great career at Birmingham and Crystal Palace. So these were all players that were in his team, his youth side. Obviously, not knowing what they would go on to at those points, but I remember going over, I think it was Geoffrey Chaucer was the score and used to try and join in with their training sessions, but I would have been really, really young. And that was probably my first real memories of football, going to their cup finals that they were always in. And then for me, it started personally when I joined a team called Bloomfield. So I was playing 2 years above my age. I was playing with my god brother and some friends growing up in Elephant Castle, South London. We used to meet at McDonald's Wharf Road, as you always do at Sunday League. We'd all jump in car schools, parents taking us to games. We're playing over. I remember a lot of our games being based over in Putney and around Fulham and places like that, West London, really. But that was my first grounding towards football. I had to really step up to the plate because the boys were obviously 2 years older than me. That meant that they was physically a lot stronger, bigger, quicker. But I had a heart, if I'm honest. I had a heart. I had a desire to always try and compete. And it probably served me well. But yeah, they were great memories. I still talk to some of the boys now from those eras. They still touch base with me now just to see how I'm getting on. And then we moved into my own age group, probably about under 11s at the time. So just starting out in secondary school with Athenley, who are quite a renowned youth club in Peckham. So me and my best friend Joe, we used to get on the bus from Elephant Castle to Peckham. That used to be a bit daunting, if I'm honest, going through Camberwell and into Peckham. But again, loved it. And at that point, playing into my own age group, I probably really realised how good I was from at that point. I felt like I recognised my own ability at that standard and at that level. But really enjoyed it. Scored a lot of goals from midfield. Somehow, our team got relegated, I think it was, or moved back a division, and the B team moved up a division. So I went and joined the B team. They had some really good players with them at the time as well. Standout for me was Dominic Shimin. He was moving from Athenley to Arsenal at the time and went on to have a good pro career as well, playing for QPR and clubs like that up in Scotland. But yeah, they were my first real memories. They were the best memories, to be fair. Sunday League, loved that. It was enjoyable alongside my school football. Before I went into the world of the academy system. The way that come about was quite strange because I went to like a foundation, I think you'd call it now, in Brixton, where I had some midweek training sessions, and the coach, Dave, at the time, recommended me to go and have a trial at the academy. And I feel like it was probably my first real experience of imposter syndrome. I didn't really feel like I was good enough or belonged in that academy environment. It was quite daunting. You walk into an environment where the boys are really settled, all get along really well, and they know you're coming in for their spot potentially. I was on I think it was a 6 week trial. Didn't really get a lot of feedback at the time. And weren't particularly enjoying it, if I'm honest. It just didn't feel like it was for me. And then got towards the tail end of the season, and season ended, and never had no real feedback about what direction it was going. So didn't return for when it was the new season, whether that was them not wanting me. I didn't get any message to say that I wasn't wanted back or anything like that, but it just didn't feel right. So returned to play my school football, went back to my Sunday team. And then by chance, my dad bumped into the coach in Brixton and he said, "Oh, whatever happened to Lewis, why didn't you come back?" And my dad sort of convinced me to go back and give it another shot. And after that next 6 week period, I was offered, I think I was probably under 13s at the time, maybe a little bit younger, but I was then in the academy set up at Crystal Palace. Again, through my time in academy football, I don't look back and have loads of great memories, if I'm honest. I really remember it being a system where your confidence would get shot to pieces. You was always competing with the others around you, so I didn't really feel like I made a lot of lifelong friendships in those early years of academy football. But I always worked hard. I loved football, and I knew I had to work hard to be where I was. So yeah.
Do you think the pressure is still the same now at this down age as well for kids going into those academies?
Probably worse. Probably worse now. I speak to a lot of my friends that I have made through football, who are now coaches or in that environment, and I've been back in to visit Crystal Palace and seen how much they've grown as a club and academy infrastructure. My academy manager that I had when I got to apprenticeship years, he's the director of the academy now, Gary Izzet. And he was talking to me about the level of the young boys coming through, and effectively that they're basically pros. They live the life of pros from 11, 12, whatever age they're in the system. Another friend of mine, Michael Kamara, was saying just how intense it is and how obsessed they have to be with football from a young age, that they're effectively pros, you know. So I see it as well. I work in education. I've been fortunate enough to be around a few students that have been in the system and environment, and I've seen the negatives and positives. Picking youngsters up when they don't feel like they're going to get that next contract, and supporting others when they're going through that next phase of being offered contracts and looking at moves to bigger establishments. So yeah, no, the pressures are there, but I think, in all honesty, if you're going to make it as a professional footballer, you have to have those experiences, and the earlier you have them experiences, the better they probably serve you in the long run, you know.
So, I mean, you're at Crystal Palace. I mean, stuff that I've got in here. You went to Crystal Palace, Baltimore on loan.
So how did that come about? So again, going through the academy, I feel like the 16 to 18, where I was on an apprenticeship, that's where I made my lifelong football friends. That was a real eye-opening to football, to full-time environment. Obviously, you're on, I think it was £70 a week, which felt like fortunes at the time, because you go from leaving education at 16 straight into full-time football, where you're around the glitz and glamour of it, but you're nowhere near it, effectively. You've got to kind of learn your trade. So I was fortunate enough. I could break it down even more. When I had a game before, and this is one of my standout memories actually, Ian Dowie coming as manager for the first team at Palace. So he was having a bit of an overhaul of the club and wanted to see the boys that had been offered scholarships. He wanted to see what they were like, so he put on a trial game. So I got permission to leave school early. Left from Victoria, went to Westminster City School. Left from Victoria, train delays, late to a game. And for me, lateness, and it's probably from this memory, lateness has never been something that I tolerate or accept. And I remember rushing from Beckenham Junction Station down Copers Cote Road. I had to run along the road with my school bags, my football bag, turning up and being very flustered, because I obviously knew it was going into quite a big game in front of the new first team management and things like that. I can't really remember how the game went, if I'm honest. But I just, that memory of not feeling prepared still sits with me quite well now. And lo and behold, after that game, effectively what happened is Palace, they couldn't retract the scholarship offer because they had verbally agreed that. But they told me, I remember Royce Wiggins, Mark French, and two others, I believe, that the scholarship is still there, but if we have any other options and I want to go elsewhere, that's available to us as well, because they don't see us in the club's plans. So you can imagine, hadn't applied for no colleges, no sixth forms. I was quite academic, fortunately, but I I felt I had a scholarship with Crystal Palace, so I didn't need to go down that route. And it rocked me. And I remember my mum and dad at the time just saying, "Well, it's there, they can't take it away from you. Go and enjoy the 2 years that you got in front of you, and give it everything you've got, see what that environment's like." So I was effectively going into pre-season, day one, not wanted. And that again, that imposter syndrome and not feeling like you should be somewhere, that was there again. But I had the grit between my teeth to prove people wrong. And within 6 weeks, maybe a little bit longer, just into the start of the season, Terry Bullivant turned around and said, "Oh, we've got this wrong. What we said to you was not right. And you are very much a part of our plans here at Crystal Palace." And it sort of kicked on from there. But that always sat with me because I could have been expendable, if that's the right word, at any time. Like I worked hard to get myself to where I was, and it wasn't good enough. And I had to narrow down again and work hard again to feel appreciated, respected. I was always respected amongst my peers, but as a 16-year-old at the time, that could have proper hindered me. And if I would have walked away from that, I may not have had the experiences in life, let alone football, that I have now. So yeah, so sorry to interrupt you. I went on to become the head boy of the academy, the captain of the academy, probably skills that I never recognized in myself, but maybe just from how I was with my peers. And that was all from not being wanted initially. And then I mentioned his name earlier, me, Royce. I feel like there was one other. Me and Royce definitely were two that went on to make our first team debuts for the club. So again, it just shows you that one person's opinion doesn't mean anything. If you sort of back yourself and put the work in, that you can kick on to get what you want from things,
But it just shows the strong will of yourself, and also of the backing from your parents as well to actually, because you just said you could have just said, oh, enough's enough. I'm going to go to college, or I want to go to uni, or whatever else, and just give it up completely.
Definitely. And you know what? Football brings those challenges, and it has brought those challenges for me up until Hornchurch last year, not getting the games that I wanted, a club that I loved, seeing the boys doing really well and being buzzing for the boys, but ultimately you want to play football. That's at 36 going into 37 years old. So I was still having them same experiences at 37 that I was having at 16, 17. But it all helps create your character and who you are as a person. And I think they're the biggest things that I take away from football is that I am who I am. And I've took a lot of skills, a lot of re rejection, a lot of negatives, spun them into positives, but they've built me to who I am today.
So did this Crystal Palace Baltimore, was that literally in America then, in Baltimore?
Yeah, so what happened was, so we had been offered our professional contracts. I think I'd done my first year and I'd picked up a groin injury. So I had surgery over in Germany, was unsuccessful, come back and saw a surgeon here, had a double hernia repair. And we're just getting to that tail end of the season and it was 1 year contract. So I started to do really well in the reserves again, getting up and running, and then this offer come about. The club had invested in what essentially was planned to be a feeder club from the US. Obviously, they had seen a market that they felt they could kind of explore. And Simon Jordan and Bob Dowie, I believe, put things into place. And the offer was on the table. I'd been offered a new professional deal for the following season, and I jumped at it. To be again, I come back to speaking with mum and dad. What do you think? And dad was very much, it's a great life experience. You don't know what happens with football, but to go and live some in a different part of the world. Mum was probably a bit more apprehensive about me going to live away from home, but at the same time would support everything and still does to this day, everything that I would choose to do, whether it's right or wrong. What mums can be like, they always got your back. And yeah. I took the opportunity up when I think I'd played about four or five Resi games, and me and Charlie Sheringham headed out to Baltimore. It's funny because at the time we'd done a bit of research on Baltimore, and what come back about Baltimore was crazy, you know. And then I returned home after that trip and started watching the box set The Wire, and I'm thinking, wow, like this is actually where I was living and the city I was in. But you didn't see that side of it, you know, because effectively you're a tourist, so you're only in certain areas. But it was a great experience, and in all honesty, if I never had Charlie with me, it probably wouldn't has been of ha have been as enjoyable as it was, because I think me and Charlie, we got on really well before we went, but that was definitely crucial to kind of ingraining our lifelong friendship that we've got as well.
You came back and it was in 2008 to Wickham.
Yeah, so yeah, really going back. So I come back. I think I had a season. I think Warnock come in as the manager at Palace. Other boys were doing really well in the youth team, as young pros were doing really well. But Warnock brought a bit of an injection of life into the club again as well, definitely. And I'd made my debut for the first team under Peter Taylor, away at Leeds, Elland Road, and then started away at Turf Moor against Burnley. And again, probably a bit of imposter syndrome. Like, didn't really feel like I was ever going to be that one that took that jump. Like, I'd watch boys like Ben Watson, Tom Saws, Gary Borrowdale, Wayne Routledge, fantastic footballers, take that jump and really cement themselves as first team players at Crystal Palace. And for some reason, probably a confidence thing, self-esteem, I don't know, I didn't feel like I was gonna make that jump. Peter Taylor had trust in me, believed in me, and had gone to Wickham in that summer, and he just said, look, I would like to bring you here on a 2-year deal. Palace had offered me an extension by 6 months, so effectively that meant that I could go for free. I remember having a really interesting and funny conversation with Neil Warnock, just about in terms of where he saw me going and where he felt I could get to, which sort of threw a spanner in the work. But once I'd committed to Wickham and Peter Taylor, I went and followed it up and went through with that. Financially, it was a better offer. It was a longer term offer, but it also meant I had that experience of playing men's football, pro football, you know. And the first season was fantastic. We got promoted on paper. It was fantastic. We started a squad on my debut. Was playing off the left wing, believe it or not, but obviously a lot younger, so a lot more energy and sharper. Like I said, scored on my debut. We went on a unbelievable, after having a really poor pre-season, we went on an unbelievable run. I think it was 11, maybe more games, off to winning starts and picking up a few draws along the way. And there was this real sense of we're going to push. Peter Taylor, obviously, that was his remit was promotion, winning the league. Again, for me, that was my first experience of seeing what that looked like. But was amongst really, really good professionals. Gary Holt, Tom Docherty, Matt Bloomfield, John Messina, these have gone into management and doing really well now. Leon Johnson was fantastic for me. But then there was a core of boys that were about my age, 20, 21, that were all pushing to sort of establish our careers, you know? So it was good. It was good. It weren't too far from home. I commuted up with Magno Vieira, another player that had done really well at non-league level and got an opportunity to play in the pro game. And yeah, it was just a great experience to win promotion. I think we finished third. We had sort of fell away towards towards the end of the season and made it. It looked like at one point we was going to be in the playoffs. I remember the owner and chairman had booked Las Vegas for us to go away. I just turned 21, so I was buzzing and banking on us getting promoted. But it went literally down to the last minute of that final game of the season where it looked like we could have been going into the playoffs and then that trip would have been cancelled. But we managed to scrape through, got promoted, and then yeah, went into the next season. I think I played about 20, I had about 20 odd starts, I think it was that season, and 10 off the bench or something like that. But then towards the end of the season, I weren't really involved. And whether that was a thing from Peter Taylor where he wanted experience to get him over the line, maybe thought I weren't cutting it at the time. But there was a little, you sense the panic, you know, there was a sense of panic that for all the hard work we had done, we weren't going to get there. And he recruited really well to bring in some top players to come in and play. Angelo Belanta come in on loan, John Akinde come in on loan and done really well for us. But yeah, no. To have that experience in your first full season of men's football was a really positive insight to what it looks like. And again, it was a case of the highs and the lows of it through that time as well.
I mean, a few moves then, you know, once the Wickham run comes to end, he was a loan period at Forest Green Rovers and then to Rushden and Diamonds. Was that Rushden and Diamonds? Was that the time, still the time, with the Flash Stadium, with the chandeliers and all the rest of it, or was that just after that?
So it was at that time, but I feel like the money had all been and gone by this time. So for an establishment and club, what I walked into with the late Justin Edinburgh, unbelievable. The training ground was on the facility, stadium was beautiful, pitch was really well kept. You had if it felt like you was at Wickham or even what Palace was at the time for a club and set up, you know. We had a chef. You had. I think they had an academy or a foundation system. So all your kit was cleaned, your boots were cleaned, things like that. Like things that you took for granted higher up the football pyramid, you know. But it was all there and laid out for you. So it was a great club. But I went in late in the pre-season. So I'd been released by Wickham. Weren't really sure what was going to happen, but it was the only time that having an agent benefited me. I'm not a believer in agents at all, but every move that I had was off of my own hard work and my own networks. And the agent had to obviously look at what was available, what was on the table. But when it come to it, what I'd found out was it weren't actually the agent who had constructed the deal. It was again another network. So Sean Derry, who I'd played with at Crystal Palace, who was a senior pro, was good friends with Justin and put in a good word. And then it just transpired from there and then connected a few dots. It didn't work out at Rushden for me, if I'm totally honest, but it was another great life experience. It was the first time living away in Digs, lived with Matty Johnson. Fantastic human being, and another lad called Ryan Charles, who again it was you couldn't have thought of putting us three together at the time, but it just worked so well. Matty had come from I think it's the level I'm playing at now, but was just he was a pro without being a pro. The way he lived and still does to this day is testament to why he's done so well in football, you know. And just to see that from myself, who had been at Crystal Palace, who were in the Championship, in the Premiership when I was an apprentice, and then drop down and see how professional Matty was as someone who had come from non-league but just had a pure desire to be a footballer, to earn a living from football, and where he got to, his season at Rushden was very, very good. And that's testament again to the work that he put in. And continues to put into this day now over at Billericay.
What was it like? What was it like working under Justin Edinburgh?
Great man. Great man. Honest. I remember I knocked on his door January because I just had enough. I just felt like I was good enough to be playing, but clearly there was things that I wasn't doing that he required. And to be fair, some of the boys in front of me were good players as well. And he just said it how it was. He didn't beat around the bush with me. He just said, "Look, you're not there right now. If you want to go and play, I'm happy to have conversations with people that might suit you, where you want to go, getting closer to home. And he stayed true to his word, but he made that environment every day very enjoyable, because we went through some difficult times very early on. Our keeper committed suicide. I didn't really know Dow that well, but you can imagine there were a lot of boys that were with him the season before and had really, really strong relationships. So, see, having been in that environment with him and knowing who he was and what he was to the club, and then seeing the pain that some of your teammates are going through, through that loss, was difficult. But again, I was young. I probably took that for granted, at that time, because there was a lot going on. We was on the way to a game, and our game was got called off, because understandably, because what news come to light, and just you're in a room full of men who are broken, were broken, and then we went up to his funeral. But I think like things like that obviously brought people closer together because of what was going on. But yeah, it was a tough time. It was a tough time to be amongst that.
Yeah, I mean, from there, from Rushden Diamonds, though, loan to Dover, then a short time at Dover, 21 games at Dover.
Dover, you know what? Dover was really enjoyable. I went there. I think they had a really good cup run. I think they had a good FA Cup run just before I got there. So got there and just enjoyed my football. Really enjoyed my football. Done really well. Didn't know it was that many games that I played for them, to be fair, 21, because I felt like I went in towards the end of January. But I think we just missed out on playoffs. But I think a lot of money, again, not really knowing what non-league looked like back then, a lot of money had been thrown into it, that league, to get the club promoted, because obviously they're a massive club for the level, or were a massive club for the level. And we missed out. I loved it. I just expected to get an offer for the following season. I'd had a few issues with my knee towards the tail end of it, and I think that didn't give them the confidence to put something on the table for the following season. And it was a sort of injury that I'd had for a few years. And what transpired was that my kneecap was in two pieces, so it can be a common thing,
Right.
but I got it all looked into and got it sorted out across that period of time where I was then not with a club. But I did really enjoy Dover. I scored some good goals there, some important goals. But that really opened and broadened my horizons to non-league, commuting to games Tuesday, Saturday, training on a Tuesday night, Thursday night. But I enjoyed it. And I think that was a time when I weren't enjoying full-time football. So going and getting that experience at Dover was probably pivotal to me then stepping into non-league.
And then sort of some local clubs then after Dover in the likes of Bishop Stortford, Thurrock for a few seasons, Greenwich Borough, back to Thurrock. I mean, what was that time like?
So that period of time was, so I'd had my knee operation, so I'd had part of the kneecap removed, and I weren't really sure what to do. I'd met my partner. She was brilliant. She is brilliant. I better say that because she's turning up. She just said to me at that time, "Look, stop sitting around. Stop worrying about things and football. Go and get a job. Go and get a job." I'm like, "A job? What do I do?" And I remember we sat, like, it might have even been an iPad or something. And I looked at jobs and a temp job with Parcel Force coming up. And it's not me at all. But it was the best thing I could have ever done. Getting out on my own in the van, getting up at the crack of dawn to get to the warehouse depot, loading up the van, deliveries. It gave me a different dimension. But what was really telling, when I walked into my first day there, I walked into the depot, and I don't know what you call him, but basically, effectively, the site manager walked in, check in, signing. "All right, young man, where to say your name?" Didn't know me from Adam, obviously, because that's the way it is. But up behind him, he's got his big Palace badge, his flag, all this memorabilia, and I'm just like, how the world works, It's like full circle. He could have potentially had known my name, but it's not transpired that way. Now I'm logging in to sign in for a day's work. And that's the beauty of football as well.
Can I ask you what? And I know this is anyway, just the one question, I promise. But on this situation, as you're on the run and you're starting at Bishop Stortford, Thurrock, Greenwich, was there any pressure all of a sudden that you felt football wise because of your sister in the way
No,
of like
not at
how well
all.
she was doing?
Not at all. Like for me, Drew, like she would come over to park with us, all the boys. I grew up in a road called Brook Drive in Kennetton. So she'd come and play with us whenever she could. And obviously, I'd do the brotherly thing, pick her. But then you started to realize other people were picking her because she was that good. They wanted her on her team. She's 5 years younger than me, so you can imagine the age gulf when you're playing at that age is like she could have been 8, 9, you're playing as 12, 13-year-olds, but she was good. And again, she probably had that bite because where she was the only girl playing, she felt like she had to get involved and get stuck in. But her game and the women's game has evolved in the period that she's been in the game. So effectively, when I was playing part-time, I think her hours were quite similar because I remember when she started at Chelsea, she had a part-time job in Sainsbury's. She'd go and train in Tuesday, Thursday night, games, and now it's worlds apart from that, you know? So she's seen the game evolve so much that she respects where she is now because that's not how her game looked at all when she first started off as what you would call a pro, effectively, for the women's game. But then I've never felt no pressure. I think the only time I felt pressure was when we got to Wembley. Because I felt like, and she dropped in as banter, Spence's don't lose at Wembley. Because I think at the time, Chelsea, they didn't lose many games. She's been to Wembley a lot of times, but she's got a lot of trophies where she's won at Wembley. She has lost at Wembley, but I was only ever going to get there once. You know, so it was a case of just make sure that she can't hold that one against you and you don't lose. But yeah, so that's probably the only time that I felt pressure from Drew.
So I mean, this historic run, of course, in the club that I would say you probably love more than possibly some of the others that you've been at in 2018 at Hornchurch. I mean, how did the Hornchurch, how did you get involved in Hornchurch in the first place? I mean, where did that come about from Thurrock?
So for me, and I'm going to go back a little bit just to give you a little bit of context as well. So I moved into Essex with my partner, where she's from, and it weren't really going well at Bishop Stortford because they were in the North League, and I was working at Virgin Active in Houston around that area. So you can imagine the hours were crazy. So I was waking up and it was shifts. So you'd either start at 5:30, you could start at 2, but then your shifts would always overlap. So I didn't really balance with the non-league kind of timetable and training on a Tuesday, Thursday game and game Saturdays. So I said to Rod, look, I need to move on. I weren't playing enough. I'd come back to the level after my knee operation through Matty Johnson. Matty Johnson was over at Stortford. And I just said, I need to just go and play. I need to step away from it for my own enjoyment. And just on a hunch, I called Mark Stimpson, who was over at Thurrock, and I said, can I come in and train? It wasn't about money, nothing like that. Can I come in and train? And it just, and this is probably where timing's key in some things, transpired that Thurrock had had so many games called off because of waterlogged pitches that I think we had Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday fixtures from that point I signed from them in March until the end of the season. And they were in the Ryman Prem trying to stay in the league. So I went in and played a lot of games and really enjoyed it. So my first real love of non-league football come through Thurrock. I sort of established myself over at Thurrock under the gaffer, Mark Stimpson. I couldn't eat. Tommy South would kill me, but I can't tell you how many years I had there. But then I moved to Greenwich Borough, and as you can imagine, Thurrock then go and get promoted, I lose out on another playoff with Greenwich Borough. I think we lost in the semi-finals to Corinthian Casuals, it may have been. And end back up at Thurrock in the Ryman Prem. But that was their final season because that was when Tommy then was stepping away from football due to his health and things like that. So all in that sort of period, when I was at Greenwich, I was expecting my first child with my partner. Weren't happy commuting. I got so used to having Thurrock 15 minutes down the road from me. But I would like to think I'm quite a loyal person. I committed to Greenwich, so I felt like I had to see it through. And we were going well. We were going well, and I was playing for a manager that I really respect and have a lot of time for as a family friend, Gary Alexander, and John Mackey, his assistant. So I hung it out, stayed till the end of the season, but I always knew I was coming back to Essex because the balance of non-league football for me has always been about location. Money does play a big factor. People that say it doesn't will be lying, but I've never gone anywhere for money. It's always about convenience. So where I was working, because your 9 to 5 is most important for me, location and distance from home, and then what your commutes are looking like at weekends. And I'd put feelers out to Hornchurch when I was at Greenwich because I weren't happy commuting. I kept getting stuck on the A2 and A12 going into Blackpool. And I think Colin come over to watch me at Chatham, away at Chatham. I remember Craig Holloway turning around and said, "Colin McBride was there today." I was like, "Oh yeah." Like, played off like I didn't know much, but I'd had a really good game. I had a really good game. And they were quite keen to take me then. And it's a shame I didn't go, but because I would have loved to have played under Jim when he was of good health, because the run-ins, the games that we had, Thurrock and Hornchurch, were always proper battles, proper games. And Hornchurch were always that club that had the players. So they always had the best teams, the best individuals. They always competed at the right end of the table. Always had bigger crowds than Thurrock. Thurrock, we didn't have many fans, but we had loyal and good fans that would go everywhere. And that would be my only regret at that time, would not have been going to play for Jim when he was of good health, because I would have loved to just, I've heard so many good things about Jim and have met and known Jim over the years. I would have liked to have experienced that. And then, like I say, Thurrock then collapsed, folded that season. And the only move that I wanted was Hornchurch. That was the only club that I wanted. And I'd had a good year at Thurrock. I think I'd scored 13 goals from midfield in a team that were battling at the other end of the state at the table. And I was waiting, and some of my pals were getting moves to Hornchurch. And I was thinking, my phone ain't gone off. I ain't know nothing. So I didn't know what was going to transpire. And then last knock-ins, I had a conversation with Colin, met with Jim, and then it all just sort of come together. The start of that season weren't very good. I was nowhere near my best, and probably if you speak to Colin or Jim, even probably thinking, "Oh, this ain't the Lewis Spence that we thought we were signing." And we were struggling. We were struggling, to be fair. And I think at that point, Jim stepped down because it was taking a further toll on his health that he definitely didn't need. And Mark Stimpson got the job. And then it all just started to snowball. I probably had a lot of sending offs in that little time as well. Missed a few games, but it just started to pick up a bit of momentum. And yeah, that club is fondly held in my heart and always will be. Like, I feel like Hornchurch, because probably because I live in the area as well, I've really connected with that club well. Really connected with that club well. And then obviously winning a trophy helps with that because I was the captain. Probably weren't one of the main influences on the reason why we won that, but there's certain demands as a captain that you have and that things that you have to put in place. And then the boys go in and win the title a few years later. I know we missed out on playoffs between that, but probably Hornchurch's most successful period, and I was a part of that. So that's something that I will hold in high regard for myself.
Can we pick up on a couple of the points you just said there around Hornchurch? Of course, the first one would be, because I think that came first out of the two anyway, but that was the, of course, the trophy. I mean, what was that like? Because no one expected a team from step three at the time to go through and pick up the FA trophy. So, I mean, talk to us about, the journey to get to, to actually get to Wembley, and even getting to Wembley, and what was that actually physically like for yourselves and the rest of the boys?
So I think it linked with the COVID period. So I think it was we got to that point in November where they shut down our league. They might have shut down our league, but we were still in the trophy, and then they released a thing saying that that competition will still play out. So you know what? My memory is so awful with things like this, but I can't even remember who the games were, but there was a game, there was one game, it was Tunbridge Angels, I really remember. I was sat on the bench. I think it might have been one of Liam Nash's first games as well. And he come off effing and blinding. And I'm like, Nashy, that's not what we do here. It's not like that. But this is Nashy, and this is why I love that Nashy believes in himself so much. And rightly so, because that boy, I've seen him produce individual moments when he's not been in a game at all, and he's gone and won you the game, and that is exactly it. So, but what it was at that point, no one really knew who Nashy was, what he was bringing. He was just new to the squad, and he was fuming because we was in the game. I think it could have even been nil nil or 1-0 at the time to them, and he come off and he's like, "Why are you bringing me off? I'll score. I will score a goal." And he sort of walked down it. He walked down the byline, made the right decision, come back, and then we went on to win the game. I don't know if one of the boys got sent off, and then we went on to win the game. I hope this is the same running that I'm talking about as well, by the way. But yeah, and then that game was chalked off. Then there was another game, and then it's like we're only allowed to be together for training for these games. So it all sort of worked well because no one else was doing what we're doing. And I don't know if we just sort of appreciated coming. It made us appreciate coming together more as a group because you weren't allowed to. It was only for this competition. Then there was another game. I think we might have played Dulwich and we've won that one. So now we're starting to get some big scalps like from the league above. And then no one was really believing that it was possible. We're just taking one game at a time. We're putting in the work, the sessions that the gaffer, Mark Stimpson, Tony Gay, Jamie Southern were all putting on were, they were intense because they were realizing that we weren't playing matches. So we had to get to a certain level, that we had to get a certain amount out of training to make sure that we didn't make a mockery of ourselves on match day, And then Wright was producing moments of magic in penalty shootouts and stuff like that. And you just started to sense that there was a momentum. And I think it probably had no one at the start. And then we won the game. Then a couple jump on it. Then it was a couple more. And then Wright does what he does in those shootouts. And then that's more people invested in it. Then you've got other people from outside looking in, and it was like, this is actually happening. We're winning games of football. We're coming together. We're enjoying being amongst each other, probably more than we had ever done before. The banter was flying. We were, in fairness to the club, they were still paying us for through that period as well. They didn't have to do that. They could have just turned around and said, "We're just going to pay you when you have a game." But they were being consistent with their approach to it, and it just all sort of started snowballing.
Crazy. I mean, it was, you just got for but how difficult was that for a player though? Because you weren't playing, was you? I mean, you just sort of meeting up, and then on occasion you might have a game at the end, here, and then about a month later you might have another game. I mean, that must
I'm
have
laughing.
been
I'm
really difficult.
laughing because I'm thinking you had me, Ricky Howes, Sam Higgins, who probably absolutely loved it because we were turning up. Training was fun. It was enjoyable. It was intense. But you didn't have that match where you come off and you're in tatters after because we were the older boys of the group. Chris Dixon come back into the fold as well. So It was probably even more enjoyable. It's probably like going back to just being around the park playing with your mates. And then every month you had one massive game, you know? And all you could do was put everything in that into that game because you weren't thinking about a league game on the Tuesday night after winning in a cup or nothing like that. It was just all or nothing. And I don't think I've said this and people disagree with me on this, but if it weren't for COVID, that probably wouldn't have happened. It probably wouldn't have happened that way because I remember being away at Darlington. Our backs were to the wall, like hanging in. I was heavy, overweight. Like I felt even heavier than before, to be fair. And we just literally camped in, dug in, and grafted and got through the game. But if you had had the crowds that they get over at Darlington there, with that level of pressure that they was putting on us, I don't know if we would have been able to withstand that. But we did, you know, and it's I think there's a lot of factors to why we won that trophy. And I hope no one else ever does it because that story deserves to be the pinnacle for where we've come from. But if someone does do it, good luck to them because to play at Wembley from step three, and win as well is you, they're not things that you foresee happening. There might be younger boys, younger pros, or younger semi-professionals that have desires to go into the pro game and get that opportunity. But from where the age I was at the time, probably so going back for us, 33-ish, you didn't think that was a possibility, you know?
Sitting Bourne, sitting in Nestle, step four this year.
Well, you know what? Good luck to her. I see Churchy. So Churchy's good friends with a few of the boys that were at Stortford. And I saw that he scored the goal to take them through against Southend. No, good luck to them. I wish them well. I think Reece Prestige is assistant manager over there. I wish them well. I just hope they don't win
Yeah. Let's get, I mean, the semi-final, who was it you had in the semi?
in the semi. Notts
Yeah,
County.
Notts County. I thought it was Notts County. Yeah, I wasn't
Yeah.
sure if that was you or the Concord Rangers one. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so Notts County, so that game was probably the biggest one, but I felt like Darlington was where we won it because we never expected to get through that game. We had a weekend away overnight. It felt like it was going to be impossible to go and repeat that at Notts County. But, and this is where not superstitious, but I believe things happen for a reason. I scored at that ground for Wycombe Wanderers. So I felt like, I don't know how I got credited with the goal at Notts County because the deflection was crazy, but I felt like I was going to have a moment in that game because of my previous experience at Notts County. So the goal that I scored, obviously, it helped put us back in because we were getting annihilated. Like it wasn't a back to the wall. We just could not get nowhere near them. They were that good, that good. And then we get that goal against the run of play, and all of a sudden, everyone just lifted. Everyone just sort of believed in himself again and started to step up. And again, we dug in, hung in, and then get ourselves to a point where we've got a chance. Nashie pops up. Ruffy's in the mix. Like there was key figures throughout that run that just added so much to that, to the running, you know. And then it took it back to penalties again. And I've listened to many. Chris Dixon loves talking. So he's done 101 podcasts, but I've listened to him speak about that scenario over and over again. And he said his thing is, I knew Wrighty was going to save one. And when you look at how the other games transpired, he's right. Wrighty is going to save one. But he said he wanted his moment in that shootout. So the fact that he was so set, and probably Chris having had the experiences that he's had in football, gave him that confidence in that moment that he would be the one that gets us over the line because he trusted that someone else would give him that opportunity for his moment, who was Joe Wright, you know? But you look at the penalty takers. Jordan Clark, I think, took one. Ricky Howes took an unbelievable penalty. And when you watch that shootout back as well, the penalties are of such a high standard. Like such a from both teams, it's just that Wrighty produces that one save that gave us the opportunity to go through to the final.
Did you take one yourself? And
I
if
don't do
I don't know.
penalties.
So
No.
what was you feeling like there then? When you got penalties like that, because I mean, even if you don't take them, I mean, I'd be the first one wanting to be substituted on sort of like, the minute before the end of full time.
Yeah,
Move.
no,
What would it
there's
feel
a.
like?
So, I don't know. We had been in that scenario a few times. So, I was probably better than I would have been. But I just remember collapsing to the floor when we won. Like, you see boys running off, running towards Dicko and Wrighty. I'm on the halfway line. I had my coat on to show that I weren't taking a penalty. There's no chance of getting me taking a penalty. And I just remember dropping to my knees. Just in jubilation, just so happy thinking we're going to Wembley, you know? Crazy, crazy moments. And again, probably until times like this when I'm speaking to you about it, you don't look back on it enough and appreciate and respect it for what it was. You know, you sort of just take it in your stride at those moments. But yeah, surreal, surreal.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I've only got two football games saved on my Sky Q.
Yeah.
One of them's Romford from last year
Yeah.
in the FA Vars, and the other one's Hornchurch winning the FA Trophy. They're the only two football games I've actually got on my
So
record.
no, so even the Romford one, like Danny Spinks, manager, I went that was the club that I went on loan to from Hornchurch the year that they went and won it, Romford. And a lot of his team talks would just be about, and he'll be putting pictures in people's head. And he used to say to Scott Doe, "Oh, you've played at Wembley, haven't you? How many times you won at Wembley?" Then when I joined, "Oh, what did you win at Wembley, Luke?" So like, I'm a big believer that people kind of put things out there, and then actually when it starts to kind of come to fruition, people link back to that and think, "Oh, yeah, he said that, he done that," and then transpired they went on to win the Vars, you know?
So you go to the final. It was Hereford, wasn't it, in the final?
Yeah.
And what was that like? Because I mean, that's not a small team you're playing either, is it?
Blur. Absolute blur. That whole day is just like from I remember being in a hotel staying at the thing is you probably start to do things differently because of where you're at. And like we stayed in hotels. I'm probably having pre-matches better than I or back like when I was playing professionally and stuff like that. But all that's changing what you do. I don't know if that's the right thing. Like, I remember getting on the coach, going to the game. You're just looking out for the stadium because you're on the way to Wembley. So you're looking out for it. We got to the ground. As the captain, I had some of the officials, people that are overseeing the day talking to me about, and then you line up here and then you're going to walk along with it. Like, those things they're not important on days like that. But obviously, they're formalities that have to be followed. So things like that took away some of the gloss of the day because they should have been the times that I'm sitting with my teammates and management and having a laugh like you would do on a normal Saturday afternoon. But you're straight into that kind of format where it's got to be done how it needs to be, you know? And I feel like because the game was on before the Vars game, the time lapse between the two, it felt like you was very restricted. You're thinking about, are your family getting in the ground? Have they got all their tickets? Are they all right? Like, these are the things that are a bit irrelevant, really, because it's about the 90 minutes that you've got to go and play and get the job done. But yeah, just I think I lasted 60 minutes. I had a back issue building up across that final few weeks before the game. I had a steroid injection in my back. But Stimmo, again, Stimmo. He had sort of prepared everything and had a certain way that he felt those games were going to play out. So he would be talking about, and when I make this change, and this is how we change the formation and how we set up, and Charlie Rough, I want you doing this and that. And you didn't really know what he was going to do on the day, but he was giving us those pictures to be prepared for that. And then ultimately, the changes that he made, taking off me and Higo. And bringing on Dicko and Ruffy, they're match-winning changes. You know, those boys come and gave the game the memories that it needed.
What a fantastic 20 minutes.
Yeah, well,
Well,
you're not going to get a better 20 minutes, are you?
I would doubt it. I mean, that's just incredible. It's 75, 86, and 95. I mean, it's just incredible. The funniest thing was that, around it though, Lewis, was when it went off, and we were sitting here watching it as a family, and the missus went, oh, she's the 1-0 down at half time. I went, don't even worry about things like that. I said, knowing what your gaffer was like, do you know what I mean? Don't even worry about being 1-0 down at half time. I said, I'm sure she'll still win this. Do you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
and that's the thing. And I probably feel like we, maybe because of the occasion, we were a lot flatter than we had been, because that pitch, that environment, it took something from you. It took something out of you. Like their goal come from, effectively could have been their own goal. It's come off Higgo. I know we still batter Higgo about that, saying he scored at Wembley, the only one to score past righty is Higgo at Wembley. But those, again, those changes that the gaffer makes and the life that that then injects just took the game to another level. And even being on the subs bench watching the game, I probably felt more comfortable looking in on it then than when I was out there trying to get what we needed to get. Because I had so much belief in those boys. Like, you knew Nashi's going to give you a moment of magic. You know Ruffy's going to produce magic because that's what Ruffy does. Like, his goal that he scores is probably the scrappiest goal he's ever scored. But when you see what he does on a football pitch week in, week out, you know he's going to bring some brilliance. Ellis gets his goal. Dicko comes on and gives you that Dicko moment of just energy, just injects it, And they all just thrive off each other. And then the other boys are just doing their jobs and going about their business as they need to in the team.
Just an incredible day. One of those ones that, you and the family never ever going to forget.
No, not at all. So it was good because that my eldest was there. So he looks at that thinking, oh, daddy's won at Wembley, like that's something that he'll never forget. Like I remember him going into school, and he had a few of his mates with him, and they're things that he'll look back on and he'll have memories of that. I just need him to realize that that's not the pinnacle of football. There's more to football than that, But yeah, no, great memories for the family. Like I said, me and Drew being able to say we've both won at Wembley. Memories that I'm gonna cherish for the rest of my life for sure.
And it's a weird thing. I don't know if you've seen it in the last couple of days. I mean, it won't be a couple of days by the time this comes out, but in the last couple of days when me and you are talking, of course, Righty's gone to Enfield Town, hasn't he?
Yeah, right. So right, he chews my ear off. He chews my ear off, right, about football. But he's a top man, and a very good goalkeeper. And I just feel for him this season, things haven't worked out how he would have liked. Again, everything happens for a reason. I think he joined us. He joined Hornchurch from Enfield. Because the gaffer believed he wanted more men in the team, and he signed Matty Johnson, Mickey Purcell, and Wrighty at the time. And now he's gone back to Enfield after a bit of an indifferent season for him. So I know he'll make it work well there because he deserves his shot in the Conference South. And he's going to get that with a club that I know he loves. And I hope he just takes it all in his stride as we know he can.
But well, the weird thing is, and I don't know if you noticed, and I'd be very, very surprised and be interested. Anybody actually, people that watch this can give me the quiz question to on this one was, has there been another team that has actually had a FA Trophy winning goalkeeper and an FA Vase winning goalkeeper in the same team?
Oh no, I wouldn't be able to
Vase.
give you
Because also Rhys Forster, of course, won the FA Vase with
that.
United. So only just recently as well. So
Oh, that's unreal.
literally they've got two keepers there that have actually won those two trophies at Wembley. So it's
I hope they let the group know that and take their
beautiful.
trophies into the ground changing room.
So Lewis, I suppose time's getting on, but I mean, I must ask you, I mean, what was it like? You had the highs of Wembley, you won the trophy. What was it like inside that dressing room, when you've got to the playoff final, and if I'm right in saying you lost to Cheshunt, and you beat Enfield Town, I think, in the semi-final, and then went to play Cheshunt and lost to Cheshunt. Then the gaffer's got to pick you all up for a run at it the next year. You have a fantastic year. I think it's the year with Bishop Stalford. Was that the year with Bishop Stalford or was that the year before? But you had a good run again, get to the final again, then pesky Averley come behind you. Do you know what I mean? No one's expecting Averley to win. Small Averley against Hornchurch. Hornchurch, the massive favourites. And then they turn you over as well. What was that like in that dressing room? All of a sudden, did the belief start to fade a little bit whether you was going to get out of, get out of step three?
You know what I think it is? I just for me, I never felt like we had enough to get over the line. We'd always pick up injuries, and that's not an excuse because there was still enough good enough players in the dressing room. But there were whether it was a mental block, I just don't ever feel like we had enough. When we needed a little bit more, that little bit of push, an extra to get over that line, for some reason we fell short. Like, people can turn around and say, I got sent off in the final against Averley at a crucial time. I think it was about 48 minutes. And the boys batter me because in the huddle at half time, I bring them in and say, look, it's go time now, and try and give them a boost up. And I'm the one that ends up getting sent off. But such is life, it happens. But if you look at those finals, again, they've played out like typical finals. Averley go and win with a solitary goal. Cheshunt win with an unbelievable strike. The lad's never probably going to hit one as clean as that on that occasion and that stage again. And both games, admittedly so, as a club, we never turned up for whatever reason that is. We never turned up, and we should have, because our budget was always good enough to be at that end of the table. Our team, when you look at the squads and the depth, were always strong enough, but for some reason we just never we never got over that line until the following season when we went on to win it. But possibly that's the thing, where when we fell into playoffs and we felt that we should have been going for the title, but we obviously weren't good enough to go for the title because we fell short to other clubs. And yeah, that's football. I'm one of those. I've not been fortunate in a playoff scenario. I don't want to tell you how many I've had, but there's been a number. And yeah, I've always fell short. Whether that's a mental block individually, I don't know. But there's a reason for it. It's not to say I haven't won things, because I have won things. But they're tough gigs. They're tough gigs. And everyone in those playoff positions come the end of the season have got a great chance to go and get promotion, and deservedly so, because you've given yourself that opportunity.
It's that always that team, isn't it, though, in the fifth position, that's the pesky little team, isn't it? Because whatever happens, they're the ones that maybe have just got in at the last minute, or they've got that last position, and the team in second are the team that are disappointed because they haven't managed to get automatic promotion, and they become
100%.
extremely dangerous, isn't it? That sort of side around that area.
Well, that year we lost to Averley, I remember we played Cray Wanderers, who come on a surging run from lower down in the league to finish in their playoff positions. I can't remember who they nicked, kicked out of the playoffs. It could have been Lewis or a club that were up there all year. But we just got by in that semi-final. We just got by in that semi-final. And again, we're expected to go and win the playoffs, you know. But testament to Cray, they were very good on the day. And probably deserved to go through. We won. I think we might have won on penalties again, but that's how it goes. It's anyone's game in those knockoff games. Exactly how we'd experienced it when it was in the FA Trophy run. You know, you can't. It don't matter if you're the top dog, or sometimes being an underdog is better.
So you pulled away from Hornchurch, come in, and now you're playing down the road at my local club down the road in Waltham Abbey. I suppose one question to ask you about Waltham Abbey is, have you actually played on a better grass pitch as a home ground other than your sort of academy stuff?
No, the only ground that I think or pitch that compares is probably Wingate and Finchley. Like, when I turned up there in pre-season, because we didn't have no games in pre-season there, because the club want to keep the pitch as good as they can for as long as they can. And I turned up to a pre-season friendly. We had QPR, and I was watching. I'm just looking at the pitch thinking, I need to get out there. I need to play on this surface, because that's one thing you lose at this level of football, is a good pitch. And I don't mind playing on these 3Gs, 4Gs, but You can't beat a good grass pitch. And at Waltham Abbey, in fairness, that they're managing to maintain it through the season. I've gone in, come back in during December when pitches are normally the well, contrast is I played Tilbury 1 week and Waltham Abbey the following. And the pitches are just well miles apart, you know. And it's a shame really, because that's what clubs should pride themselves on. But I know unfortunately it's an added expense. But yeah, the pitches, I enjoy playing on that pitch and that surface.
Well, one of the last questions to ask you about before I let you go, because I know you're a busy man, but that I was sitting there for the Whittam Town game, and we went in to see it, and I was sitting there with a couple of friends watching the game, and I looked at the, and I didn't know at the time that you was there at the Abbey, and I looked through the sort of like the team sheet, and I saw your name on it. I was going, really? Do you know what I mean? Because I'm so used to seeing you in the
Yeah.
hall set out, and then I turned around to one of the guys and said, holy smokes. I said, Lewis Spence is playing. And they turned around and this cost much. Who? Right?
Yeah.
I got right. So I turned around and I went, trust me. I said, by the end of this game, you'll know who Lewis Spence is. I said, because if I said he's a top quality player and he's playing, and the Abbey have got him playing for them. And just as I finished that conversation, you pinged one from what, 40 odd yards straight into the top corner. And I just turned around and went, well, I did tell you. I mean,
There you go.
talk us
Last
through that
answer.
goal, because that goal was something else. And if there's a better goal scored in the Isthmian North this season, I'll be very love to see it because it was absolutely incredible.
No, like I was saying earlier, things happen for a reason. You've potentially spoke that into existence, because I weren't having the greatest of starts to the game, trying to find my feet into the game. It was my first league game actually. So again, probably a bit of imposter syndrome. Want to put myself on the group, let them know that what I can offer. And I've said this before, and I've done it a couple of times. I'll always try it, because I just feel at this level. This level of football, for some reason, goalkeepers think they're footballers and want to get involved as much as they can in the play. And I take it back even further. Crossbar challenge. I remember watching it on Soccer AM back in the day. That'd always be a thing that you try and train in. So why not go for it? You know, I know I can back myself doing it. Why not go for it if it's on? And I've noticed in later years, I've tried it a lot more, because probably I haven't got the legs to get up the pitch with the ball as much now. But again, it's come off. It's come off several times. So on that particular day, I think the wind was a little bit with us as well. And I thought, I've intercepted a ball. And it's always easier if you do it on transition. So I've intercepted the ball, took a touch out my feet. I was probably giving away all the other passes, to be fair. So I thought, go for it. And it's come off, you know. And again, that probably helped me settle straight in back into the club as well, because the boys had already been on this terrific run to give them the chance of being in the playoff area. You've got myself as an old boy that only knew one boy in the changing room before I joined the club. Got to prove a point, which I like. I like that. I like that having to do that, because it means that you've got to step up to the plate. And then, like you've said there, the fans don't have it. Non-league environment, people are very much within their club and who they're playing against. So outside of that, people don't really care. So they're not going to know Lewis Spence, 37-year-old. They're probably thinking, who is he? What can he bring? But hopefully, with that and the other four that I've added on top of that in that short window of time, the club, I know the club definitely, and speaking with the gaffer, but hopefully the boys feel like I'm a part of them and want to be a part, and they want me to be a part of what they're looking to achieve. And hopefully now that the club are seeing that as well, and some of them might know my name now, but hopefully it's all for good reasons, because that's what it's about. The
It
club's
is.
always bigger than the player.
No, absolutely. And it's been literally, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. It really has. Wish you all the very, very best with Waltham Abbey, and hopefully you'll take my hometown team in the playoffs or even higher, who knows? But
Oh, please, that'll be a
yes.
great cherry on top, wouldn't it?
I'll try and get down again as soon as I can to come down and say hello in person as well. I know I'm heading down on the 29th of March because of course you've got Morden Tiptree in here, which will be an interesting game, especially what's going on down there at the minute. So that'll be
That'll be a very different game to the game we had against them the other week, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. But listen, Lewis, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back for another episode of My Life in Football Season 4 very shortly. But from me and from Lewis, good night.
Thank you.